Yo.
Hey. Can you hear me?
You listening to Hashtag. W-A-W. What a week. Hey, what a week. Week.
Ata, welcome to another edition of Wow, What a Week. Today, we hang out with one of my favorite DJs, producers, vocalists, and generally, one of the finest exports out of Chicago. Next.
This is
Wow!
What a week.
What a week. Celebrity guest.
Celebrity guest.
We're going to jump straight into it. His name is synonymous with all things house music, whether it's production, DJing, singing. He's been a household name since the early 2000s. He's now one of us, as it were. Please make some noise for Harrison, the Crumpster. Crump. How you doing, brother?
How you, man? How you
doing? I'm good, man.
Good, 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 good.
Harrison Crump. Is that a stage name or is that in your passport?
It is in my passport.
Okay.
When I first started, I was trying to use different names, and then some guy was rushing me to put a name on one of the vinyls.
So what names did you go through before you got back to your real name?
I had the Crumpster.
Yeah.
I had the Yellow Man.
Okay.
Some early names, you know. And I just said, I just put my name on there. But actually, I'm a junior. My father's name is Harrison Crump Sr.
Ah.
Yeah, so all right. I got it from my father.
What was that record that needed your name urgently?
It was a record that I did out of friends. It's called Body, I believe. I'm not sure. I think it was called Body. It was a small, small label.
Yeah.
I mean, they just started up, you know, and they were looking for some music at the time. And I was actually still working at the time. I had a job. And I just was trying to sift out, send demos out, you know.
Sure.
And then they signed the record, yeah.
So at the time, what was your 9-to-5?
So I used to work in the stock market.
Okay.
Yeah, so I used to work.
Oh, so you used to make real money.
Yeah. Yeah,
and you left that for this.
I should have left that for this. So, yeah, I was actually in the S&P 500 pit.
Oh, shit.
And.
Is it as wild as we see it in the movies?
Woo! It was wild, bro.
Jeez.
People spitting on each other.
Oh, wow.
I was a runner. They called me a runner.
Okay.
So I used to run the trades. So I get it from the trader. I look up in the pit and I get my trades and I trade and I used to send it in.
Oh, wow.
So I used to work in that pit and the Euro dollar pit. So that was my job. So it's got so wild and crazy, you know, I eventually got moved up and then I got hired at another job where I was able to put the trades in.
Ah.
But I was still making music at the time.
Yeah.
And then this is long, long ago. And then I made an error. It's a true story. I made an error in the S&P 500. I sold 30 March. I posted sold 30 June.
Jeez.
So I made a $20,000 error and they fired me.
Oh, wow.
And one of my boys, we still friends today. His name was Mike. He was like, hey, man, don't worry about them firing you, dog. Don't stress.
Yeah.
You got talent, man. Don't stress. So I was like, hey, I'm stressed, man. My daughter was just born. I'm like, hey, what am I going to do now?
Jeez.
And I got on a train, the Metro train. I was just thinking, like, what am I going to do, you know?
So you were fired on the spot?
I was fired on the spot.
Jeez.
And I was pissed off because I'm like, hey, you guys got millions.
Yeah.
You know, there's errors every day. But I think I was a little arrogant back then because I felt like job wasn't really for me. I wanted to do music.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
Looking back at work in the pit
and
being in the industry you're in right now,
yeah.
What lessons would you say you took from the pit that are serving you to this day in music?
I had to be time. My time is impeccable. I'm never late for gigs.
Yeah.
Never late for interviews.
You were right on time.
Like, yeah.
I mean, you arrived your 30 minutes before your time.
I always do.
As one should.
Yeah, as one should. Yeah. Yeah. So, but being in the stock market, you have to be on time.
Yeah.
You can't be late. When that market open up,
yeah,
you can lose money right then.
You can't still be on the train on some shit. I'm still on the train.
No. You can't do that. No, 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 no. And the Metro chain in Chicago,
yeah,
it's never late.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's a snowstorm.
Yeah.
It's never late.
You know, that's one thing that blew my mind about. So I was in Moscow for the Soccer World Cup.
Mm.
And we went on a tour of the underground train system.
Mm.
And every 90 seconds, there's a train. And our guide told us that if you're late in Moscow, you never blame the train.
Mm.
Because for as many years as the metro has been in existence, every 90 seconds, there's a train.
There's a train.
Without fail.
Without fail. That's Chicago for you.
Yeah.
They'll fire you in Chicago. You know, you don't get to work on time, they'll fire you.
Yeah.
So it taught me a big lesson, you know, how to be responsible.
Sure.
And being responsible in the music industry is a big lesson.
Growing up in Chicago, tell us about that.
Yeah. Well,
because you know, to your average house music lover, Chicago is the home of Ten City.
Yes.
For instance.
Yes.
You know, it's the home of That's the Way Love Love Is.
Yes, definitely.
But Chicago is bigger than that.
It's bigger than that. Yes. Yeah. So, a quick story, you know, eighth grade. Let's go back to my eighth grade, 1984.
Yeah.
I don't want to tell my age, but yeah. 1984.
Yeah. I was in fourth grade.
Yes.
Or fifth grade. Yeah, one of the two. Anyway, carry on. Yeah.
1984, I was 14.
Yeah.
14 going on 15 in the summer. And I started hearing about these parties, you know, people were throwing in a basement. And I was like, my boy was like, hey, man, let's go to this party, man, you know. They playing some dope music. I was like, okay, cool. How are we going to get there? You know, I said, no, we can walk. So cool. So he said, but we must look cool. We must wear these baggy pants. We wear penny loafers. And then we must pump our hair up like this. I said, ah, man, that's weird, man. But he's like, no, we must do it.
Yeah.
So we went there and they were playing some music, you know. And I was hearing this song called Waiting on My Angel by Frankie Knuckles.
Yes, sir.
And like,
so this is like early Frankie.
Yeah, early Frankie, only Frankie records. And I was like, wow, this is really dope, you know. And a lot of Adonis records from Adonis. And
oh, yes.
All these early guys was like, and they were playing vinyl then, you know, and it was in everybody's basement.
Yeah.
So I ended up starting to go to a lot of house parties, you know what I'm saying? And I was like, wow, you know what? I'm really loving the vibe because at the time, Chicago was getting into a lot of violence. And the people that partied at different parties, there was more gangsters there. Yeah. But at house parties, you had people that was more eclectic.
Oh, yes.
You know, had that feel. So going up to Chicago, especially in the winter, was very brutal, you know. Yeah. So like going to the party, if you really wanted to get to that party, people that was there, they really wanted to be there.
Yes,
because walking in zero below weather and catching the bus.
Yeah, yeah.
And then once you get there, everyone, they want to get down and do their thing.
Yeah.
It was that feel, you know. That's the early stages.
Which artists do you look back at and say, you're the reason I fell in love with house music?
Little Louis.
So we're looking at like, 84, 85, 86, right?
Little Louis.
Yeah.
I love Little Louis, Frankie Knuckles, Marshall Jefferson, Ten City.
Oh, hell yeah, Marshall Jefferson.
Definitely. Yeah. That's the Way Love Is, you know, Move Your Body.
Yeah.
I remember when Move Your Body came out, I was in high school.
Yeah.
And everybody was playing this thing on a cassette tape.
Yes.
And they would have to put the headphones on you just to listen to it.
That was me across the Atlantic, bro. That was me.
So definitely Move Your Body was one of them songs. It was like, wow, and Waiting on My Angel.
Yeah.
And
I remember being in primary school or elementary school, as you guys call it, and hearing Jack Your Body first time.
Yeah.
I lost my fucking mind. I was like, what the hell is this?
Yeah. And then as time went on, Farley Jack Master Funk, Steve Hurley and all them guys, they ended up being on the five something they was called.
Yeah.
And they used to come on at night on Saturday around 11 o'clock at night on radio.
Yeah.
There was no, you know, TV where they came on. So you had to turn on the radio station at night just to listen to them.
Absolutely.
And Hot Mix 5, they were called actually.
Yeah, yeah.
And that actually just built the whole house, start building the whole house community in Chicago at the moment.
So how does music then start happening to you?
Well, the thing was that I started listening to R&B as well, and then hip hop started finding its way as well.
Oh yes.
And then I went.
Was this the first hip hop wave or the second hip hop wave?
I think it was the first one with like LL Cool J.
No, that would be the second.
That'd be second.
Yeah, that was the second wave.
I think the second wave kind of kind of made me, you know, Beastie Boys, you know.
Yeah, because for me, the second wave was on some, okay, now we're talking.
You're talking, yes.
Your Cool J's, what the was it, the Fabulous Five?
Fabulous Five,
the
yeah.
Fat Boys.
Biz Markie.
And then Eric B. said, hold Eric, my beer.
Eric B., yes. There we go.
Not even Eric B., Rakim.
Rakim, yes.
Rakim said, hold my beer, guys. Let me show you how to flow.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I was influenced by that a little bit.
Yeah.
But I felt like my crowd of people was the house people.
Sure.
You know, they kept me safe because my mother was divorced. She had just got divorced somewhat, and I moved in with them. It was just me and my sisters.
Yeah.
So we had to move into a worse neighborhood where I stayed on 56 and Woods. And on 56 and Woods, that street was on a low end. We call it the low end, I'm actually really from. And on that block, actually, it was Fred Hampton Jr., the Black Panther son, stayed on the same block I stayed on.
Oh, wow.
And across from me was Casper, the guy that made Slide to the Left,
Slide to the Right.
So I had a kind of a little bit of influence of...
So there was culture on your street.
It was definitely culture on Wood Street, bro. So I was like, okay, what do I get into now? You know what I'm saying? So I was like, you know, I'm really feeling the music. Like, it was in my heart, in my house, you know? So I said, let me start getting into music, yeah.
But you went to film school, though.
I went to film school, yes.
Why are you not making movies?
So it's a funny story there.
Yeah.
I went to Columbia College.
Okay.
Film school. I took music.
Yeah.
I took film, and I took a little bit of computer science.
Yeah.
I felt music. I got an F.
Jeez, okay.
And I passed film school. And I remember when I felt in Columbia College, and I went to the teacher, I said, hey, man, how did I fail this, man? Oh, you can't read music. I said, you're going to see me soon. One day you're going to see me.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
But I passed in film school. I don't know how I did that. Oh, man, it was a true story. Yeah, so.
So then you flunk music.
Yes.
You pass film.
Yes.
So what's the next step after that? What happens?
So while I was in Columbia College, a guy walked up to me and said, hey, man, you do music and stuff. I heard you do music. I said, yeah, I do a little bit, but I don't have a studio, you know?
Yeah.
He said, I got a little studio in my basement.
Yeah.
And his name was Felix the House Cat.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about Felix the House Cat. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. So he said, yeah, I'm working with this other guy named Roy Davis Jr.
Jeez, bro.
And I was like, okay. And then he said, I did some piano work for a guy named DJ Pierre.
Jeez, bro.
So I'm like, okay, cool, man. Yeah. I'll come to your house. He lived in the suburbs.
So but obviously, you had no idea the great company you were in already.
Well, he wasn't. Felix wasn't nobody there either.
Everyone was coming up.
Everyone was coming up. He had just played a little bit on a record called Fantasy Girl.
Yes.
He only played the bass line on there for DJ Pierre.
Sure.
So he invited me to his studio, and somehow he had a full-fledged studio.
Yeah.
And I was coming from the hood, and I had to drive to the suburbs to record with him.
Yeah.
And I was just singing then.
Sure.
So he kind of got me into, you know, like, hey, man, let's do house.
Sure.
And that's how it all started, so from there, yeah.
Hmm. How would you say meeting Felix the House Cat changed your life? And possibly change it forever.
You know, his meeting Felix, he had a different sound at the moment. He wasn't really doing what some of the other guys was doing, you know. And he kind of like said, "Hey, Crump, let's make house, but let's make it different," you know. And he had he would call me in the morning like, "Bro, what are you doing?" I'm like, "I'm sleeping." He's like, no, nigga, you sleep when you're dead. Let's get to the studio. What are you doing? You know, like, okay, cool, man. I don't even have money to get this. Like, no, I'll send you money. I'll come pick you up.
Yeah.
And he pushed me, you know, and he showed me you can get deals. You can make money from this.
Yes.
And I was like, okay, cool, man. Let's keep pushing. He was definitely a big inspiration. Big ups to Felix. You know, he's still pushing these days. And yeah.
Mm. Now, you living in the lower end of Chicago.
Yes.
And, you know, Chicago is notorious for gang violence.
Yes.
To this day.
To this day, yes.
In fact, probably from the 70s to this day.
Yeah.
There's gang violence in Chicago probably every single day.
Yes.
One, how did you survive it? Two, is there a solution?
So how I kind of survived it, to be honest with you, I mean, it was all as well. There was GDs.
Yeah.
And they were pretty prominent in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And where I stayed was in between, actually. So my block actually separated both gangs.
Yes.
So that was somewhat good for me because I didn't have to associate myself with one of the gangs because I kind of sat in between.
Yeah.
Secondly, what I used to do, I used to throw small parties. So I told my mother, Mom, I won't sell drugs. I won't get in any gangs if you let me stay out late at house parties. And if you let me throw a party once a month.
Oh, wow.
I was only like 15, 16.
Sounds like a great deal, though.
Yeah. She was like, okay. Because she knew what was around the neighborhood. Yeah. You know what I'm trying to say? And I was like, okay, cool. So I used to pass out these pluggers and tell everybody, hey, man, I'm throwing a house party, bro. Come to my house. Because in the back of my house, I had like a little yard. And I used to hire DJs. I wasn't DJing at the time. And them guys used to come. So the gangsters, they wanted to come.
Yeah.
So the gangsters would come. And like they used to call me Pooey.
Yeah.
They're like, hey, Pooey, we coming to your party, dog.
Where does Pooey come from?
Way from when I was young. I said the Winnie the Pooh dog. You know, I can't tell that story.
All right, Pooey.
You know, so, you know, and the greatest thing is that these guys used to come to my yard, and I used to say, so if you wear your hat to the left, you all's well. You wear it to the right, you GD. So when they used to come, and they wanted the party because house was like coming so strong.
Yes.
I say, guys, just put your hat to the front.
Yeah.
And we good. They're like, oh, okay, Pooey. Okay, cool. So I got to know the gangsters. So the gangsters know I was the music boy.
Oh, yes.
So they didn't mess with me, you know. But for the solution, I feel, as you said, Fresh, is that that's a big commitment for the community, you know, having both parents in the home, you know. More education, you know, drugs that's being flew in from different countries and stuff that's infiltrating the neighborhood and stuff like that. I feel had a big part of our infrastructure in our neighborhood. One of my family members was definitely hooked on crack. I can't say who he is, but big time. I mean, when crack infiltrated in right like 91, 92, you've seen a lot of your family members just fall off, you know?
Yeah.
And one of my own family members was part of selling drugs to my own family member at the time.
Yeah.
And back then, crack was powerful.
Sure.
I don't care if you was a doctor, lawyer, if you tasted it,
yeah,
you were hooked.
Yeah, that's it.
That's how powerful it was then.
Yeah.
So that was one of the reasons, you know, people fighting over territories, you know what I'm saying? Drug dealers. I mean, you at the age of 18, you can be rich, and young boys didn't understand how to be rich then.
Yeah.
And fighting over territory was one of the things. Yeah.
You've had a Magnum 45 pulled on you.
Yes.
What happened?
So I was getting into production.
Yeah.
True story. And I was like, man, I had just did a publishing deal with BMI. And I was like, man, you know what? I need some more equipment.
Yeah.
So I heard about these boys. They had an MPC and they had a Kurzweil 2000 rack mount.
Sure.
They said, no, we'll give it to you for $2,000. I was like, man, that was a steal back then.
Yeah.
That thing cost almost altogether $6,000.
Yeah.
So they say, hey, man, meet us on the corner at 5:00 p.m. I never forget this.
Yeah.
And it was December 17th, freezing outside.
Yeah.
And I had like a little Jeep, but one of them Jeeps, you know, with the top come off.
Oh, yes.
So I said, let me bring one of my boys with me. We drove down there to meet them, and they wasn't there. So my boy had to go to work. He wasn't a music guy. He said, hey, man, drop me off at work. So I dropped him off at work, and then these dudes called me back. Said, hey, man, we missed you. Why you come back?
Yeah.
I said, man, I was just there, dog. He said, no, come back, dog. We here.
Yeah.
We got the stuff. I drove back, and I seen one guy on the corner. I said, maybe this guy's selling weed or something. And then I seen the guy come off the porch with the equipment.
Yeah.
So I parked my car. I didn't turn it off because turn your car off in that cold weather.
Yeah.
It's hard to start back up. So I left the Jeep running. I got out the car. As soon as I headed towards the equipment, another guy come out the gangway. So the gangway, you know what the gangway in Chicago, we call it, between the houses.
Yes, yes, yes.
He came out with a 45 Magnum with a mask. He put it to my stomach.
Yeah.
And by the time I looked up, I was in between the gangway.
Yeah.
So he said, man, get on your knees. I said, oh, man, don't do this, man. Don't do this. And I had the money in my sock.
Yeah.
I had about $4,000 in my sock. He said, where's the money? I said, man, I ain't got no money, man. I ain't got no money. And then it didn't face. He went, ch-ch-ch-ch. I said, hey, here's the money, right? Here's the money, man. Then he said, no, get on your knees. He took my coat.
Yeah.
I had a brand new coat on. You know, I just did a little publishing deal.
Yeah.
So he comes from the back of me. I'm on my knees in the snow.
Yeah.
He let off two rounds. Boo, boo.
Jeez.
It was so loud, I thought he shot me.
Yeah.
So I held my stomach like the movies and I started walking to the car like this.
I'm gonna miss you, mama. I'm gonna miss you, mama.
Because it was so loud.
Yeah.
So you know they say when you get shot, you don't know you're shot.
Absolutely.
So I was like, hey, this dude, you know, it's like, man, all you think about is your family. You
and it's a Magnum. It'll be very loud.
It's very loud.
Yeah.
Very loud. And I can see the name of the gun when he put it in my, I just said, this guy going to blow my stomach out.
Yeah.
So it taught me a lesson. Don't do deals on the street.
Absolutely.
You know.
So I guess you don't use Facebook Marketplace.
Yeah.
So let's get to, and then music changed my life.
Mm.
What was that moment?
I think that moment was, I was in London.
Yeah.
I was doing a couple of some gigs here and there.
Sure.
And I was at an event and the guy walked up to me and he had my vinyl in his
hand. Do you remember what year this was?
I think this was in 96.
Okay.
1996.
Okay.
And he walked up to me and he had one of my records, which was a record that I did on this label called Shaka Boom Boom. I think it was called Shaka Boom Boom.
Yeah.
I was doing a lot of stuff with French labels, Belgium labels and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, man. He's like, hey man, I was waiting for you to come. I was like, wow, way over here, you know me.
Yeah.
You know, and it inspired me, you know. And then they said, yeah, man, are you gonna play this tonight? I was like, yeah, I'm gonna play it tonight, you know. So it kind of changed my way of thinking that people abroad can appreciate something that you've done, you know, from scratch, you know. Yeah. Hmm.
Can we agree that England did so much for house music? Chances are, had they not supported, especially house music and artists from the US, we wouldn't have the industry we have right now. Because not only did they support it, not only did they book you guys, not only did they subgenre it, they turned a lot of you guys into international stars.
Definitely, I feel England was a major contribution towards house because you know what? We really didn't have major stations in Chicago that was playing house music on major stations.
Yes.
As a major rotation.
Yes. It wasn't top 40 music.
It wasn't top 40 music. Yeah. So, you know, Europe was playing our stuff as top 40.
Yeah.
And we were getting publishing. We were getting notarization from that stuff. So
you were getting gigs.
You were getting gigs from that. We were flying the world with that stuff.
Yeah.
We're releasing records with them. And at the same time, I mean, some of the producers in Chicago felt like it was kind of some of our sound was stolen.
Yes.
But I don't really feel that way. I just feel like that it was just music moves, you know,
yes.
Music moves in different directions. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
And they did play a big part in it.
Would you say that is the fine line between cultural appropriation and inspiration to take it to the next level? Because sometimes that's what it is.
Yeah.
That I'm going to hear... I want to hear acid house music and I want to take it and turn it into something else across the pond, for argument's sake.
Yeah.
So this shit Derek May did
that
inspired a whole generation of producers in England, for argument's sake.
Yes.
So Derek May could turn around and say it was cultural appropriation. Or he could turn around and say, I'm so glad I inspired these kids because look how far techno has gone now.
Yes, definitely. I think that people like Derek May, you know, even Felix, you know, it inspired, you know, other people to move on to other genres and of music to spread out like this, from EDM to tech house.
Yes, sir.
And as I said, you know, I don't think that it was meant to be. You know what I'm saying? It moved in the right direction. I mean, house. We celebrate in Chicago, just celebrated 40-something years in house music in Chicago now.
Yes.
And now, actually, the mayor of Chicago now is actually giving so much money towards house events at the moment.
Yes.
And it's a really good thing to see now. Yeah.
When did you realize that you were making waves in South Africa?
So normally I do Miami, music conference in Miami.
Yes.
And this was before I was really known.
Yeah.
I didn't even have money to fly to Miami.
Yeah.
So I used to save my money and I used to take a bus to Miami.
Sure.
From Chicago to, it was a long drive on that bus.
That's a long bus ride.
It's a long bus ride.
Yeah.
And when I get there, I didn't have money to like have the hotel right on the ocean.
On South Beach.
Oh, yeah. South Beach. Yeah. I had to be outside.
Yes, sir.
So I had to take a bus from that small hotel just to get to the Miami conference when I first started. So I did that for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And used to bring my demos down there. So one year I was there, I was chilling, you know, walking around. I was hanging with actually Glenn Underground. We were hanging together.
Oh, yes.
You know, Glenn, he's got a big mouth, you know.
Yeah,
what's up? So he started talking. So these two guys walked up to me. They're like, hey, man, are you Hedison Crump? And I'm like, yeah. I mean, who are you?
Yeah.
He said, no, we're from South Africa. I said, what's your name? He said, my name is Harrell.
Yeah.
And he said, and the other guy said, no, my name is DJ Mbuso.
Yes.
He said, you got a big song here called, in your out country called Stomp Your Feet.
Yes.
And I said, Stomp Your Feet? And I said, you guys like that out there? Yeah.
No, it was anthemic. It was anthemic, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He said, yeah, man, the song is big. I said, I never would think that sound you guys would like, you know? He said, yeah, we licensed it from Subliminal Records from Eric Murillo.
Yeah.
Rest in peace, you know?
Yes, sir.
So that's how it all started.
You know, our first trip to Miami, I think it was 2001. It was myself, Oskido, Vinny, Christos, Sammy T.
Okay.
All five of us shared one hotel room.
What? you're worse off than me. What?
I think we'd underestimated how much hotel rooms would be.
Yeah.
And one of the guys, his booking, like, it fucked out. So we're like, don't book another or just come stay with us. It's fine, man. We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out.
So our first Miami experience was all of us in one hotel room.
What?
It was the wildest shit ever. But it was worth it, because three, 4 years down the line, we were playing on the small floor at the Masters of Work party.
Yes.
And I think the power of networking is precisely that.
Yes.
And I think Miami did that for a lot of people.
A lot of people, definitely. Yeah. Definitely, man. Miami made a lot of, I did a couple of deals in Miami that really changed some things as well, you know?
Yeah.
And I was really, I mean, at first I was going there, I was like, man, I'm really losing a lot of money here.
Yes.
Is it really worth it?
Absolutely.
You know? But after a while, it became worth it, yeah.
Please put on your headphones, actually.
Yeah.
Speaking of Miami, Harrell and Mbuso.
Yeah.
We have a message for you.
Hey, yo, this is DJ Mbuso. Soul Candy, Pezulu Records, Hedison Crump. Where do I start? I met him. I think early 2000s. Mm. We're in Miami at the music conference. Mm-hmm. I remember rolling with my boy H, and I saw this dude Hedison, and I went up to him, and I asked him like, "Yo, man." Hedison, then he says to me, he looks at me funny, firstly. But then anyway, long story short, we start talking. Then I tell him about bringing him to Africa. The first thing he asked me was, are there hot women in Africa, brother? And many years later, he's married here, man. That's like the funniest thing. But besides that story, I've worked with him on so many albums. Mm. Musically, he's a genius. Mm. Got so much respect for him, so much love. I've learned a lot from Hedison. Man, I've got a lot to say, just not on a voice note. But yeah, hope you enjoy the interview. Fresh, you rock too.
Thanks, man.
H-Man, rock them.
Thanks, man.
Tell us about your relationship with Mbuso. In fact, I remember when All I Need came out.
Yes.
And I've told the story before. I always say that when it comes to A&R and spotting a hit from the get-go, Mbuso is unrivaled.
Yeah, definitely.
And Soul Candy had offices in Rosebank.
Yes.
And I was doing the breakfast show at YFM. And Mbuso said to me, before you leave for Durban, come pick up a record. I went to the record shop.
Yeah.
And I picked up that yellow vinyl.
Okay.
And he said to me, don't listen to it. Just play it when you get to the club.
Just play it.
I get to Tilt Nightclub. I put that record on, and the place fucking jumped. Tira was at the, because it was Tira had he did the gig,
yes.
So he was at the door with Tizozo before Tizozo started singing. Tizozo was our door guy. Tira comes running up and saying, "What the fuck is this record?" And he literally put the needle back. And we started it again.
Again.
And the crowd fucking lost it again. I think we played the record 5 times that
night. Yo. Tilt in Durban. Yes, yeah. I used to, for that guy, what's his name? The promoter.
Was it Mimi Casares?
He was Portuguese or something.
Yeah, it was Mimi Casares. Yes. Mimi? Yeah, Mimi Casares, yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
So for me, my relationship with your music, I always link back to Mbuso. Because Mbuso would always give me your records and say, "Don't listen, just play it.
Yeah,
trust me." He'd always say, "Trust me."
Yes.
Tell us about your relationship with Mbuso.
You know, when I finally got here, but he actually didn't bring me here. Actually, it was a colored boy that brought me here, a very young boy. He was like only 24. He sent me a message saying, "You want to do a tour in South Africa?" I was like, "Yeah, no problem." He said, "We'll give you safari. Yeah. Come down."
Yeah.
And I came down, and Mbuso knew I was coming down.
Yeah. Do you remember what year this was?
I think it was 2002.
Yeah.
2003, I think.
Yeah.
I came in my first time I landed. Yes, but when I landed, though, I brought my manager from Belgium.
Yeah.
So this guy, he was excited. He's like, "I'm going to the motherland, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I want to see the Tigers." But I knew, like, "Oh, no, man, see the Tigers laying around, bro. Come on, bro."
That's funny.
Yeah. So I told the guys, "Listen," I said, "listen, man, give me a good safari. You know, I'm from the hood, man. I'm from the hood. I want to see no little cats. I want to see the real thing. You know, if you're going to give me safari, I want to see a real thing." So I said, "This is a true story." So he's like, "Okay, cool. We're going to give you the real thing, Harrison." So they drove me out, and I don't know where I went, I think an hour out of Joburg. He said, "Do you know how to ride a horse?" I said, "Yeah, I'm from the country. My father was from New Orleans. I know how to ride a horse. Put me on a horse." So I got on a horse. Then there was two girls from Canada that was there. Tour guide took us out, and my horse was old and slow, so I got left behind a little bit.
Yeah.
Then next thing you know, some warthog or something jumped out the water, trying to do something to my horse. My horse flew me off my horse.
Jeez.
I seen the tour guide way in front of me, screaming. Anyway, that story was crazy, man. So yeah. So going back to Mbuso, man. Mbuso brought me into his home. He said, "Can you stay longer?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "You can stay at my house." He didn't charge me anything. He didn't extort me for gigs. He didn't feel intimidated.
Yeah.
He just blessed me. He introduced me to so many people. You know, you can say whatever you can say about Mbuso, but you know, he loved the music, you know, and big up to him. You know, big up to him. Definitely, man.
What would you say your biggest learning has been since relocating to South Africa, just compared to growing up in the lower end of Chicago?
I can say that a big lesson is finance in this business, number one.
Yeah.
And taking care of yourself in the music industry, because there's so many things working, you can find yourself in trouble. And when you don't do anything wrong, things that's wrong wants to come to you to do wrong to you.
Yeah, yeah.
Because now you've grown a name now, and now you have to protect yourself.
Sure.
You know, and I go back to a story of me doing a big deal with BMG.
Yeah.
They paid me a lot of money for a publishing deal.
All right. Was this overseas, right?
This is overseas, and I was actually starting to come this way.
Oh, okay.
And I was out balling, man. I had got that money. I was buying little cars. I was buying computers for everybody.
Jeez, bro.
I was, you know, I was doing my thing, man. You know, I did buy some studio equipment. And then one day I was just chilling, man, you know, with some friends, some chicks. I was single then, you know, some chicks, you know.
Yeah.
And this girl said, "Hey, can I get some wine?" You know, baby, champagne, baby, champagne, lobster, baby, whatever you need, baby, you know. She swiped my card. "Something's wrong with your card." I said, no. Swipe.
Yeah.
She said, "No." So I called the bank. I said, "Hey, what's wrong? What's going on here?" She said, "Oh, Mr. Crump, you are 3,000 rand negative in your account."
Fuck.
I had a lot of money. That money I went through that money in like 3 months.
Jeez.
I was broke again.
Yeah.
And I had got paid from a record label, which was Played Against Sam in Belgium for my album.
Yeah.
They paid me in advance as well. They never released that album. I never recouped that money from BMG.
Oh, wow.
It taught me a major lesson. And I couldn't go back and take the album and re-release it.
Yeah.
I had to make a whole nother album. I was broke. I was broke. And it taught me a major lesson about the music industry.
Yeah.
Don't ball out. There will come a time that you would do swipe.
And nothing happens.
And nothing happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it, because you know, a lot of a guy's expectation from artists, there's a lot of expectation, you know, yeah, there's a lot of pressure for people to see that you're doing good, you know?
Yes,
and some people around you, it's not the caliber that you are. If they feel like you're not doing good, then you're not worthy of something.
Yeah.
It's a strange feeling, especially that feeling in South Africa, is people, they can kill you so quick.
Yeah.
You know, it's not as quick as in the States. I think here people are more closer to you.
Yeah.
They see you around, you know, they see you walking through the mall.
Yeah.
They have their expectations, you know.
Mm.
So, yeah, it taught me a major lesson about finance, you know.
Now, your music not only inspired a whole generation of house lovers in this country, but for instance, someone like AKA.
Yeah.
Sampled some of the music and did justice to it.
Yes.
And almost gave it a new lease on life.
Yes.
Tell us about that journey of seeing your music repurposed, reimagined, and born again, as it were.
Yeah, I got a phone call, and it was Sticky. And he was like, I knew Sticky through someone else. He's like, hey, man, can you come to the studio, man? Kenan want to play you something. I said, who's Kenan? He's like, this is this rapper.
Yeah.
I said, okay, cool, bro. I said, but I'm not into rap at the moment here. He said, no, just come through.
Yeah.
So I came through, and then I met Kenan. And he's like, hey, man, big ups, bro. You know, hey, bro, it's a pleasure to meet you. I've done something on one of your songs. I did like this thing. I said, okay, cool, man. Let me check it out. So we sat in the studio. I listened. I'm like, yeah, man, that's nice, man. Yeah. But he didn't have the front of the vocal on there. He just had the loop of the music on there at the moment.
Yes.
So he said, can I use it? And I said, yeah, man, you can use it, you know, no problem. I said, let's chop it up on the publishing, but you can use it.
Yeah.
And he like, no. Then he said, do you want your name on it? Yeah. And I said, no.
Yeah.
I don't need my name on it. Yeah. Just credit me on the publishing.
Absolutely.
And he's like, cool. He's like, do you want to be in a video? I said, I'm looking at him like, okay, no, man, it's cool, man. I don't need to be in the video. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's a hip hop record. I'm house. You know what I'm saying? So it's cool. And when it came out, and I was like, hey, man, this record is really blowing up, you know? And it actually, to be honest with you guys, I feel that record made him somewhat.
Yes.
Somewhat. Yeah. It took him to another level, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, and then it came up, and then it was nominated for so many awards, you know.
Mm.
And me and WHP did a song, So Amazing. His song, that song, beat out me and WHP at the Metro Awards.
Yeah.
So I never even got an award for that song, you know.
You should have had your name on it.
Yeah, I should have had my name on it. I should have said, put me in the video. So, but it was cool, man. I mean, big rest in peace, you know, to him, you know, man. He was actually...
To both of them.
Yeah, you know, very, very nice guys, very talented people, man. You know, I really miss them guys, yeah.
How do you deal with challenges like loss?
Mm.
You know, whether it's losing all your money because you were reckless or losing industry colleagues.
Mm.
How do you deal with loss?
Hey, you know, to me, I look at why someone passed away or what happened.
Yeah.
Could it have been prevented, or it was just something God had wanted, you know? I'm spiritual in some way as well, you know? I think you have to be in the music industry. You have to be, we spiritual people, you know?
Sure.
People may not see that, but we are. When someone passes away that's really close to you, you know, you think about, could you have done something different?
Yeah.
You think about, could you have made a phone call while they were going through things, you know? I remember when WHP was going through things, you know, he had spoke to me about, hey man, people not noticing my new work now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no man, you're a legend though. Sometime when you're a legend, you've made your mark already. Yeah. There's always going to be new artists.
Sure.
There's a new artist coming out. There's a new rapper coming out.
Mm.
You take what you've done as a legend. We both legends. And you move that into another space, into business.
Yes.
There, here and there.
Yeah.
And I just look at like mental health is a part of it as well. You know what I'm saying? And having the right people around you. And I just want to go to this point of one time that I met R. Kelly.
Yeah.
So R. Kelly didn't live too far away from me.
Sure.
And a friend of mine invited me to his house.
Mm.
Okay, we went to Puffy's house. Went to his house. So he lived in the suburbs.
Mm.
So I went to R. Kelly's party. I got in there. No one really knew who I was. Tyrese was there. I remember Michael Jordan was there. I was like, wow, you know. Ferrari's outside. And I said, hey, man, can I meet Kelvs? I was asking one of the guys that I know.
Mm.
He said, nah, man. Kel's getting his hair braided at the moment, but you can talk to his manager. I'm like, who's his manager? He's like, no, his manager's name Pookie.
Yeah.
I said, Pookie? Pookie from the West Side, Pookie.
Yeah.
And I said, his manager named Pookie? How can you have a manager named Pookie? You know? Now, I'm getting to that whole point.
Yeah.
Who you associate yourself with when you become big.
Yeah.
Is very important.
Sure.
If you associate yourself around yes people
and
not a good woman to tell you no,
yeah,
you can.
Sure.
And that's what happens.
Mm.
You need people around you to say no fresh.
Sure.
Head is a crump, you're talking nonsense now.
Mm.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
You know? And that's how we get caught up thinking that we the man and we will always be the man. And that's what happens.
Who's that person for you? Your voice of reason, as it were.
I think it was old school friends, you know, that seen me come up from nothing. Definitely, you know, my wife, you know. People that's not in the music industry.
Yeah.
You know, people that's not think that I'm not completely famous. I'm not a Kanye West, but people they look at me as a person, not as Harrison Crump.
Sure.
That can say, hey, man, we're not drinking Cavassier tonight. We're drinking...
They can call you out.
They can call me out
yeah.
really quickly. Like, what are you doing, bro?
Yeah.
You know what I'm trying to say?
Mm.
And that's what keeps me humble, you know, and keeps me focused on still making good music.
Absolutely.
Because once you think you're here, you're not making good music anymore.
Yeah.
You know, so that's how I feel, you know?
Speaking of voices of reason...
Mm.
Hi, DJ Fresh. This is Nassine. I'm Harrison Crump's wife. Right. Yes. Thank you for having Harrison on your show. Honestly, Harrison is probably he's so humble. Harrison's just a humble, wonderful guy. Very big on family, an amazing husband, amazing dad to my kids and to his kid. You know, he's very family orientated. Harrison is very creative in what he does. A lot of people like to associate Harrison with just house, but he's produced all genres of music. He's actually an excellent gospel music producer, something people don't know. Mm. He's done amazing gospel music. He's done R&B. He's done hip hop. So, you know, he's so versatile. Harrison could, you know, he sleeps, he eats, he dreams music. He would sit at the table in the kitchen and he would tap on the table and he would think of a beat and he's like, that's it. And he'd run to the studio. So, you know, that's Harrison.
Yeah.
One thing people don't know about Harrison is that Harrison loves gardening. He'll wake up in the morning, early in the morning, and he'd pick out the weeds. He loves that. He loves gardening.
Yeah.
He's actually really chilled. Has his very quiet personality, not as boisterous as people think he is. Very, very humble. And he doesn't like eating raw tomatoes. He loves onions. He eats onions with everything. Like, you can make something. I can make a curry and he'll eat onions with it. He chops up onions with every single thing. Yes, I mean, he's integrated so well into South Africa.
Mm.
He's just got to learn how to say foot. he needs to start learning how to pronounce our native names properly.
Mm.
But yeah, he is wonderful.
Mm.
Tell us about Nassine. Where did you meet? Yeah. And what was it about her? Because you meet women all the time.
Yes, yes.
Whether it's in Chicago, Miami, England, yeah. South Africa.
Mm.
What stood out about her?
So I was invited to an album launch, DJ Claude.
Yeah.
At the bank.
Yes, sir.
In Rose Bank.
Geez, that's a while ago.
It was a while ago, yeah. And he had put out a CD. I don't know if it was it with Soul Candy, I think he put that.
Probably was, yes.
It was with Soul Candy, yeah. And I don't smoke cigarettes. I smoke cigars here and there, but I seen her walk into the smoking section. Yeah. Mbuso was there. Everyone was smoking. I'm like, I don't smoke, but I like the legs. I see. I'm a leg man, you know. I like the legs.
Both me and you, bro.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know, you know, more of a like, okay, what's happening here, though? You know, so I seen it from
a right? Good pay.
Yeah.
Put leg in legendary.
Exactly.
Thank you very much.
So some men, you know, they don't, you know, I don't like nice legs, bro. You can't be like this, back in and walking. No, it's not sexy to me. No, I'm like, no, man. The face won't even finish it off. No,
oh,
man.
Fuck, you're funny.
So I was like, no. So I seen her and I was like, oh, yeah, she started talking to me, you know.
Yeah.
She was interested and she thought I was from South Africa that went to America and came back with an accent.
Yeah.
She's like, where are you from? I was like, you're from Chicago. She's like, you sure you're from Chicago? I said, yeah, I'm from Chicago. So she started smoking. She was smoking a lot of cigarettes back then. And,
yeah.
And what, you know, what gave me, what made me want to be with her was that I love a woman that does what she says she's going to do.
Yes.
I love a woman that's respectful and do what she says she's going to do.
Yeah.
She says she's going to be there 10 to meet me. She's there.
Yes, sir.
No excuses, daddy. I'm going to make you a curdy and the curdy comes.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I love a responsible woman and a kind woman. You know what I'm saying? Yes, she's colored, mixed with this and that and this. Yeah. I was like, you know, she was a little rough on the edges, you know, coming from the black women in Chicago, you know.
Yeah.
I had to kind of compare that. But she was there when I said, I need you to be here and let's do this together.
Sure.
She was there. Yeah. I can say that.
Deciding that I love her so much that I'm willing to relocate for her.
Yes.
Let's talk about that.
That was a big decision.
Yeah. It's a huge decision.
Very huge decision. You don't know.
In terms of family, who's still in Chicago?
So my mother's there. My father passed away 2 years ago, and I've got my four sisters there and my one daughter.
So like entire families in Chicago.
They're still there.
So who's the first one you told that, guys, I don't think I'm coming back?
Well, definitely I had to speak to my daughter.
Yeah.
That was the first.
How old is she?
She's 24 now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she was a little bit young at the time.
Sure.
And that was one of the most hardest things to
do. Bro.
That was very hard.
Yeah.
My mother, she was cool with it, you know. I was traveling a lot anyway. But yeah, well, I think my daughter was the first to say, hey, maybe moving overseas.
Mm.
Yeah. But that took a long time to get used to the customs here. You know, people think that when they see me, I'm just here. But it took a lot for me to get used to
acclimatize.
Yeah. I remember my first time I jumped to drive in this country. This guy gave me his Mini Cooper and back in Chicago, Mini Cooper was a girl's car. Did you know that?
Yeah.
So when I seen all these Mini Coopers, I'm like, hey, man, all these guys driving, all these guys, they must be, you know?
Yeah, there must be after fivers, after niners, whatever it is.
You know? So Mini Cooper's like, no, if you got a Mini Cooper, man, you cool out here. Yeah. I was like, what, a Mini Cooper?
Yeah.
I was like, okay, cool. So the dude let me drive a Mini Cooper down the street. And my eye looks this way instead of looking that way.
Yeah.
And I knocked all...
Yeah, because you're driving on the wrong side of the road.
Yeah. And I knocked all his mirrors off. So I had to pay for his mirrors. Because when I go into... I'm leaning.
It's a tight squeeze.
So anyway, making that transition of just the food, the fill of the ketchup, the milk, you know...
Culturally, how did you acclimatize?
Culturally, was very, very hard at first.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to do some strange things. I used to order, like, in Chicago, we call this a cold drink. You call it a cold drink. I call it pop.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
So one day.
Soda pop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one
day. We call it cool drink.
You call it cold drink.
Yeah.
So I was at a gig one day and the promoter was like, hey, man, oh, you know, order something to drink, man. I was like, order some stuff for some of the guys. I said, okay, no problem. I said, give me 10 pops.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, this guy comes out with bowls of pop. And I'm like, hey, yeah. What's this now?
Yeah.
I said, no, you ordered 10 pops.
Also came with pop.
Yeah.
That's a lot of pop.
That's a lot of pop, bro. It was, it filled the whole, and it was the big bowls. I'm not only coming with the small ones. They came with the big ones. Oh, the big pop. And the promoter came back like, hey, Addis, what's this now? Yeah. I said, man, I don't know. I was ordering Coke. Pop, this came out.
Oh, wow.
So it was just a big culture shock for me, man. Yeah. I mean, I love this country, man. You know, every country got its problems, but you know, I had to kind of mingle my way in, you know?
Yeah. Any resistance to your relocating here?
I feel there could have been a couple of resistance, you know? You know, you're doing gigs here. There may be some people that don't want to see you take their gigs. They thinking sure. You may be taking their gigs.
Sure.
But I don't look at it like that because, you know, especially when it comes to house.
Yes.
You know, house is all over the world, you know? I wouldn't mind another DJ playing in my country or playing in Chicago. You always talk to other DJs like, man, come play in Chattown, you'll love it.
Yeah.
You know, come play in New York, you'll love it if you're at the right venue. You know, so you can get some haters. There were some haters. I can't say who they are, but there were some.
Mm.
And but I looked at it like, you know, it's just
But were they like blatant about it or was it very subtle?
You know, Fresh, there's certain gigs you will see. And during out your career, you say, I should have been on that gig.
Oh, yes. I hear you.
It doesn't have to do with
where it doesn't make sense why you're not on the lineup.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
You're like, these guys, why I'm not on that gig?
Sure.
You could have thought, was it personal? Was it finance? Was it just they didn't think of me?
Sure.
And you're like, nah, man, I should have been.
Yeah.
Or wherever you feel, radio, wherever you felt, there's something that blocked me there.
Mm.
And but I didn't take it personally. It's the music industry. Mm. You know, what can you do? It happens in corporate. It happens everywhere. So, yeah.
What do you say to a lot of kids who feel exactly that, that my song was one of the most played songs in the clubs last year, but I didn't get one booking? I had one of the biggest sing-alongs in the clubs, but I'm not getting radio play. Mm. How do you deal with feelings of either rejection or being bypassed or possibly even gate-kept, as it were?
I think it has to do with a couple of things.
Yeah.
I feel that, you know, you can have a big song, but you don't have a big network.
Sure.
The network here is a lot of talk as well, a lot of social media network, a lot of people that you associate yourself with as well.
Yeah.
You can be a young boy in Alex somewhere or Bloemfontein making this track and no one knows you, but your track is hot. It may make it or it may not make it. I think it's got a lot to do with timing, how it was released, who you are, your surroundings.
Mm.
And just pure luck.
Yeah.
You know, the music industry is about luck as well.
Yeah.
You know, I feel personally, you know what I'm saying? So, and that's why you just keep, until the young boys is out there struggling and still trying to get there.
And girls.
And girls. And girl producers and girl DJs.
Yeah.
Keep pushing. You know, your time will come. Never give up. You know, it was plenty of times I wanted to give up. Especially when you're trying to just make a living at this. You know, you want to give up. And like, I'm like, no, I'm not giving up because I feel this is where I'm best at.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going back to work. I'm not going back to the stock market, you know.
There's like, no plan B.
There's no plan B, you know. And being humble at this as well and giving people and treating people as you want to be treated, you know.
Yeah.
Because that guy that you treated bad, next 4 years, he's A&R at Sony.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, hey, how does this happen?
Sure.
Things come in a circle. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what I've learned. You know, things come in a circle. Just be humble in this game and keep moving forward.
Let's talk streaming and digital content. What are your views on these streaming networks? What are your views on giving your music away for free versus don't pirate my music, for instance? What are your views on bootlegging versus if I don't have an official permission to remix your song, I won't bootleg it? Because there's a lot of politics around that.
Yeah, especially now they've got the STEM separator this out.
Yeah. You know?
And it's being implemented into Machine, MPCs, Logic, you know, Cubase, and all these different DAWs is being introduced now. And I was just doing my research on it last night, actually.
Yeah.
And coming from vinyl, you know, people had to actually go out and buy that record.
Sure.
You know, if they wanted that record, they had to get out the bed, put their socks on and their shoes on and their drawers on and go out in the cold or this rain to make sure no one else takes that copy from them. And then during that time, we had A&Rs that when I used to send a record out fresh, just to go back a little bit, I used to have to walk to the post office, put it on that machine or buy the cassette tapes, send it to Europe. Cost me $21 to get it there in 3 days, or I had to wait 14 days for it to get there.
Yeah.
Get in somebody's defective box or whoever I was sending it to try to get a deal. Wait another 2 weeks for them to listen to it.
Yeah.
Wait another 2 weeks for that contract. Wait another 2-3 weeks for that bank transfer. It was a 4-month process for a song to get noticed or to get signed. That goes back to A&Rs listening to actual tracks to pick out the best tracks. Now you're able to release so fast now. You got Fruity Loops, you got all these samples coming in, you're making a song in one day.
Yeah.
But is it a legendary song? Will this song last you 20 years? Now you've got so many songs that's being released now, you don't know what's what.
Yeah.
So I think it was a little bit better. It was a little bit consumed back then. The streaming services, you're able to get to more creative people here and there, but like, what are they giving on these streaming services? What is Spotify giving us on some of these on our records at the moment? You know what I'm saying? I look at some of my statements like, well, how do I even buy bread with this?
Yeah.
You know, let's look at Eminem, let's look at Snoop Dogg, as they mentioned, like, I had billions of streams, but my check was only $9,000.
Yeah.
You know, so it is a problem. I think they're trying to change it.
Sure.
But let's see what happens.
But what do we do though? Because you have an option. Don't have my music on your streaming service.
Yeah.
Which means millions of potential streamers are not going to hear my stuff.
Yeah.
Versus, let me put my stuff out there and I might get gigs from it. You know, it's a trade-off almost.
It's a big decision for artists to make. Yeah. I mean, I think it depends on where the artist is sitting actually at that moment in his career.
Yeah.
You know, if he's just starting out or if he's really making some momentum and he decides. I mean, people always say, hey man, a record label robbed me, but you took it in advance.
Yeah.
You signed that deal.
Yeah.
You had a lawyer look at it and you said yes. You took the money. You said no, take my masters, and that's what you said. But did it get you somewhere though? Did that label get you somewhere?
Yes.
You wasn't known until that label actually pushed you. You know, we must look at some of them at that strategy of when you want to sign to a major label or you want to sign to a major publisher. What have they actually done for you? Or have they transitioned your career? Would it be the same if you being on the street selling out the boot of your car?
Absolutely.
So that's something to think about.
And there's a saying, if you can have someone else spend their money on your career, then by all means do it.
Yeah.
Because people have turned self-release and being independent into this sexy thing. But it's not. You're spending your own money. If someone's willing to spend their own money, let them spend their own money on you.
Spend their money.
Because, absolutely.
I mean, yeah, they're going to recoup it. Yeah. And they got a percentage on top of that money. But at the same time, it can help you. You may move faster in 6 years. It'll take you 6 years on the streets.
Yeah.
It may take you 1 year to become someone.
Yeah.
And then, you know, being an artist, there's a time limit to that too. You know, you're getting older. You know, you can't be waiting till you're 50 to break it big.
Yes.
So yeah.
And there's also issues of competition and market saturation. How are you navigating that? Because there's like more if you close your eyes and threw a pebble, you probably hit a DJ.
Yes.
There's how many DJs there are out there right now.
That's true.
How are you dealing with that evolution of the industry?
I think it comes down to being creative with your career. I think it's about your contacts, a little bit of your PR.
Yeah.
I think reaching out to different sectors, not just reaching out to venues, you're reaching out to different events that happen that you wouldn't actually be a part of because they're company events.
Yes.
Not just big companies, but other small companies. There's fashion, there's basketball games, there's golf games, there's different things to where your brand can still be a part of, where it won't look like that you're taking your brand a different direction, but it's just about having your presence at some of these different alternatives. It's just not a club where you just must be at the club. No, there's other things that from your brand perspective, that people and other companies and other people that are starting up that want you.
So find your place under the sun.
Find your place under the sun, yes.
Don't always be in the club.
Don't always be in the club. Yeah, you know, we got to stop. I don't know how long we're going to stop playing. You know, I don't know when you want to stop playing and when I want to stop playing.
I'll retire at 65, like everyone else.
Yes.
Maybe even 70, we'll see.
Maybe 70, yeah. And we don't know what may change at that time. It may be robots playing. Who knows what may be happening then.
I'll fuck up any robot. Bring a robot. Give me 10 songs, give the robot 10 songs. Let's see who rocks it.
Let's see who rocks it.
I'm scared of AI. There we,
there we. There we go. Yeah, man. So that's true, you know. You know? Yeah. So that's how I feel, you know. I never get depressed about where my career is or where my life is, because I just want to tell a story before we go. I was at a gig.
Yeah.
Not at a gig. I was flying to a gig in Germany, Berlin.
Yeah.
And there was a snowstorm in Chicago. And they said, no, you're not going to fly out. And I was behind on my bond. I'm like, yeah, I need that money. And they said, you won't fly out. So I wasn't going to make that gig. And I sat at the bar next to this girl. And she was like, are you okay? I said, no, I'm all right, man. I just missed the flight. They canceled the flight. She said, yeah, I was on the same flight too. You know, I was going to the same place. I said, what are you going to do? She said, no, they said I got bone cancer and I'm going to see a specialist. They said I got 4 months to live. The girl was like 22 years old.
Jeez, bro.
And I was like, and I'm up here crying.
About a bond.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I said, from that day, I won't let nothing touch me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll get here and there.
There's shit that is not even worth you sweating.
Yeah.
And more often than not, it's majority of the shit you go through.
Exactly. So in the music industry, I said, if I'm going to do this, I'm not going to let these things take me down or get me depressed. Oh, I'm depressed. I didn't get that gig. Oh, they didn't put my record out proper. Let's keep moving. Keep pushing. I don't care what people say about you. 1, 2, 3. I just keep moving. I keep pushing. And remember, I had to get new friends here as well.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
You did a whole reset.
Yeah, whole
of
reset.
Everything.
Everything. Yeah, everything, man. I even had to learn a couple of languages. You know what I'm saying?
But your wife says you still can't say for tech.
For tech.
Oh, there you go. Sorted. You are welcome.
Yeah.
We've told him how to say for tech.
Yeah, yeah. So
there's the debate, and I think it's a lame debate about the sync button.
Yes.
Let me tell you why I think the sync button debate is actually lame. Because often people say, if you're using the sync button, are you really DJing? Mm. But these are the same people that are using the digital display, the BPM digital display, to their advantage.
Yes.
That doesn't make you any different to someone using the sync button.
Yes.
Because if the sync button is a problem, so is the digital display then, surely.
That's true. Yes.
Then we must cover up the digital display, and we must just all use the pitch.
You must listen from your ear.
We just listen from your ear.
It's like you're playing vinyl.
And so, does it matter whether people are using the sync button or not?
You know, I think DJing is definitely a skill, but it's also one of the most beautiful thing for God to give you.
Yes.
You know, we can go out and play 1 hour to 2 hours. Yes, it's work. Yes, we worked hard for it, but it's still a great profession.
Yeah.
I want to work hard for that mix. I want to work hard for that set. I want to have a little sweat on me.
Yeah.
I want to like.
Yes.
I just don't want to.
You want to show up for yourself, not even for the crowd.
Yes.
dude, the days I play a set, I get back in my car, and I'm like, motherfucker, that was me.
Yes, yes.
I'm impressed with me.
I'm impressed with me, yes. And that's how I like to feel, even when I do a lab.
So you want to work for your set?
I want to work for my set. Yeah. I want to work for it. I don't go and time stress my songs on a computer to 117. Everything's 117.
Yes, sir.
I've seen some guys playing without headphones. I'm like, come on, man. They're not working for that set.
Sure.
They're not working for that set.
Yeah.
I don't feel inspired by that. I feel inspired when I'm seeing a guy, the needle skipping on the wax. He's trying to fix it. You know, he's trying to get it back. Yeah. You know, he worked for that set.
Absolutely.
Now, promoter, pay me.
Yeah. You can see the sweat.
Oh, he paid me before. Definitely. You know, like, okay.
So I agree with you that I want to work for my set.
Yeah.
But I don't care what you do for your set.
Mm.
If you're rocking the crowd and that's how you choose to rock the crowd, it's none of my business.
Yes, that's true.
And I'm not going to make it my business. I'm not going to get my flipping drawers in a fucking knot because, you were using the sync button. It's none of my fucking... Dude, if you can DJ out your ass, fucking DJ out your ass.
Yes.
In fact, that'll impress me more, actually.
Yes.
So please DJ out your ass.
And that's the question, because I know you asked a lot of questions. I got a question for you, though.
Yes, sir.
You look back at your career.
Yeah.
Would you have done anything differently?
I would have done nothing differently, including the 2 years at law school.
Mm.
The 2 years at law school, I feel, were part of my journey.
Mm.
So I wouldn't change anything about the journey I've been on. Mm. I think I am the sum total of every good, bad, and God-ordained decision that happened in my life.
Mm.
And I'm happy with the man that I've become.
Mm.
So I don't think I would have changed anything about my DJ career, like nothing.
One more question.
Yes, sir.
If your kids decide they want to play.
My son is a DJ already.
There we go.
My 9-year-old is learning how to mix already through his brother, who's 22. Mm. If that's what my kids want to do, that's what my kids want to do.
Mm.
I mean, my son was so good at tennis.
Yeah.
I bought a property with a tennis court. And then he lost interest.
Huh.
And then he took up basketball. He was so damn good, converted the tennis court into a basketball court.
Okay.
And then he lost interest.
You see.
Now he wants to be a DJ.
You see.
My role is to support my kids become better versions of themselves, not to live vicariously through them or think there might one day be a retirement plan for me.
Mm.
That's what I believe.
That's what you believe,
That my role is to guide them and let them fly.
Mm.
But not to coddle them or be some helicopter parent that says, no, you ought to do. If they need to make mistakes, let them make the mistakes. How else do they grow? How else do they learn?
Mm.
Yes, they can leverage off the privilege of being my son or being my daughter.
Yes.
But I want them to walk their own journeys.
Mm.
That's what I believe, but that's just me.
But are you? Would you be a LeBron James and say, you see your son play a bad set?
I tell him.
You tell him?
No, I tell him. I tell him if I feel that his set was not what it should be, I tell him.
You tell him.
If I saw him looking at his phone during his set, I'll tell him, put your phone away, respect your crowd.
Respect your crowd, yes.
You know what I mean? If the mix was a bit careless, I'll tell him, my dog, you need to practice more. You need to do this too. I don't think we do our kids any favors not telling them the truth about what they're delivering. If my kid can't sing but they believe they can, I have a responsibility to tell them as gently as possible that I don't think this is going to work out.
It's going to work out.
Don't be brutal.
Don't be brutal,
but don't lie.
Don't lie. Yeah. You're not sounding too good, son. Let's try another note here.
you know what I mean? You know what I mean? Like a bring it down a notch. That might work for you.
Yeah.
So, man.
All right.
Let's talk about your foundation quickly. We need to wrap it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm the Harrison Crumb Foundation. Going to be launched soon. It's going to be focusing on building a financial future for your career.
Okay.
Also focusing on mental health.
Okay.
As well, which I definitely feel that a lot of artists need.
Yeah.
You know, during the journey.
Yeah.
And and just making it not as this foundation serious thing, is making it fun as well, you know, bringing in people that can assist and that can bring artists, and not just recording artists, we're talking about producers, we're talking about songwriters, we're talking about DJs, that can bring them into a different space and let them know that there is support if you need it.
Sure. You dropped a new album late last year.
Yes.
Tell us about it. Who should get a copy? If they haven't heard it yet, who should go out there and get a copy?
If you love house, if you love Afrotech, if you love just listening to music,
yeah.
It took two and a half years I've started working on an album.
Yeah.
It was dropped in September. I also featured Ron Carroll from the States.
Yes, sir.
I featured Brian Timber from here. Mm. I featured Citizen Deep. Lulu Cafe is on the album.
Yeah.
Holly Ray is on the album as well. Some very talented South African artists that worked well, you know, and I believe it's a great album, you know. It was just something that I felt I wanted to do.
Mm.
And there are songs on there that's not really typically for the DJ. Some of them are for the DJ.
Yes, sir.
Go out and get it, you know, on all platforms. I did give it to the platform we spoke about earlier.
Yes, sir.
So, yeah.
Let's wrap it up with a message from V Gobbs.
Okay.
Marzinho. I'm only seeing this my guy message now. So did I forget something? Excuse my voice. Sorry.
What's happened with this message?
I'm not too sure if it's podcast friendly. When he first got to the country, and then this was Chisanya Midrand. I got introduced to him. Nabloma at Buso's house. I think Kobrem leader or something like that. He's like, oh, 7 or 8, some of them. And then I got introduced to him. I know Rabloma from Kenya Tavana. Oh, that nigga. Yeah, no. He'll never forget me. Like, every time, he's like, hey, man, you gave me my first taste of pussy in SA. And now I've got a wife and a kid.
Oh, God.
Gob says you hooked him up. He hooked you up with girls the first time you came here.
Oh, Lord.
But now you're married with kids and you're settled down.
Yeah, you know.
Gobs, what the fuck is wrong with you, dog?
Yeah, this must have been an ancient year. Yeah, I think, you know, I was, you know, doing some small dating back then, you know.
Yeah.
Buso's house was one of them houses you didn't sleep there.
It was like a box of chocolates.
You didn't
you don't know what you're gonna get.
You didn't sleep there, man. And I had to move away from there. I went far away from there. I went to Cosmo City, actually.
Yeah.
When I first moved out. So yeah, that was an experience.
Absolutely.
It was a big experience, yeah.
Has the industry been good to you? Any regrets on your part?
You know, people say that Hedison, you're too humble with some things. And I said, no, it's okay. You know, things have come around, you know.
Yeah.
No regrets. Just I think that now, I think us as brands have to be a little bit more firm about some of the business things that we do.
Yes, sir.
Because we put a trust in a lot of people.
Mm.
Because we've been through so much. And we want to give people the benefit of the doubt.
Yes, sir.
But at the same time, when you get messed over and you're like, I should have did it a different way.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the things I felt like I should have been a little bit more harder on situations, you know, but it's just sometimes that personality comes out and you become that guy that you always are.
Mm-hmm.
And people may want to take advantage of you. Because they think they know you know what I'm saying? Because now they got your number, or they think they know you, you know what I'm saying? And they don't understand how long we've been doing this, the sacrifices that we've made in years and years and years and years and years and years. Mm. So, yeah, I don't regret everything, but some things you think back, I should have been a little bit harder in that space.
Sure.
Did things differently, or I shouldn't have said that, but it's okay, you know?
Mm.
Yeah.
Or I should have remembered that it's okay to actually say, no, thanks.
Yeah.
I can't do that.
I can't do it. Yeah. You know.
Because sometimes your humility or your empathy jump in where they shouldn't. Like they have no space in that situation.
Yeah.
Where no was the only logical answer. But for some reason, you still said yes.
He still said yes, you know. I mean, I just did an event for someone, you know, and I said yes. And then it didn't turn out to where they kept their side of the agreement, you know. Mm. And it's like, there I go again, being Mr. Nice Guy.
I've got the same problem. There's a DJ. I almost said his name.
Yeah.
And he's got a reputation for not paying other DJs. Mm. So he'll book you for a club. The club will pay him, but he won't pass the money on to you. And he'll do that with a whole bunch of other people, but not pay them. And it's almost like now he's using us to finance his lifestyle.
Exactly.
And like I said, I'm actually a quarter to call him out, on his bullshit. Because it's bullshit, bro.
Hey, it's bad.
In fact, when we met on Tuesday at Opera, he was there.
He was there.
And he's treating me like he doesn't owe me money. And I'm like, how the fuck, if I owed that many people, I would not fucking leave the house. So for me, it's the audacity of you owe so many people, but you still carry on in the industry like it's all butter.
It's a joke.
Oh, it's a joke. Yeah. So clearly we're fucking pussies.
Yeah.
That we continue to allow it to happen.
Ish. You know.
So I've got the same problem as you. We will deal with it one day. Or we'll pray harder.
You know, when you, the thing is that I learned one thing here in South Africa. When you don't have money here, it's different than the States, bro.
Yeah.
When you don't have money here, you don't have money.
Yeah.
Like if you don't have money here, you don't have food.
Yeah.
Like in the States, if you didn't have money or you had zero in your pocket, you can go and buy food at the pantry. We'd call it the pantry.
Or you can get food stamps.
Food stamps. Yeah. Or there's these little places you go where they got free chicken.
There's a proper welfare system.
Yes.
Yes.
Here. Oh, man.
Here, if you have nothing, you have nothing.
You have nothing, bro. Yeah. Lights off, no bread, nothing, bro. Yeah.
Not even a meal.
Now you can't even really make a phone call.
Yeah.
Because you can, luckily you can get a phone call coming in.
Yeah.
You know, but you got nothing. So people that book you and say they're going to do what they're going to say, you're giving your services, it's actually become a serious thing.
Yeah.
You know, 10 grand, 5 grand, even 2 grand means a lot to somebody.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially if this guy got kids. Yeah. It means a lot to someone.
Yeah.
You know, so. Yeah.
So even if you promise someone $500 for a set and you don't pay them the $500, you've denied that person $500 worth of a little bit of living, a little bit of dignity. It's but true. Some promoters don't get that. Some venues don't get that.
Mm-mm.
It's like nobody gives a damn about what you're putting someone else through with not paying them what is due to them.
Mm-mm-mm-mm.
But anyway, we'll rant and rave another time.
We'll get to that.
Harrison, thank you so much, my dude.
No problem, big man.
Thanks for the inspiration. Yeah. Thanks for the heart. Thanks for the passion. Mm. And thanks for inspiring a whole generation of house music lovers in the late 90s, the early 2000s. And carry on doing it the way that you've been doing, dude. We appreciate you. We love you. Mm. And keep punching above your weight, dog.
Thank you, man. It's a pleasure being here, Fresh. And I mean, you're one of the pioneers. I've seen you, you know, plenty of times. You've been so humble every time I've met you, every time we hook up or we see each other at gigs here and there.
Yeah.
And your journey has been great, bro.
Mm-hmm.
From radio to DJing to everything that you've done.
Yes, sir.
I look at you as the king. They must give you another key to the city, to the country.
I must get my first key to the city.
You must get it, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'll wait. Until then, we keep pushing. We keep plodding on.
Definitely, man.
Ladies and gentlemen, Harrison Crump is about to leave the building.
Thank you.
We are part of the Africa Podcast Network. Email us at waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Mm. Coming to you from Amp Studios, downtown Johannesburg.
Mm.
It's been another incredible episode with another incredible guest. Mm-hmm. Shout out Pezulu Works for all of the cinematography, Trevor and your crew. We love you. You do an incredible job. If you need them for your wedding or you're even doing a music video or a movie, they will shoot it for you. Mm-hmm. Trust me.
Mm-hmm.
And shout out to Keletso Modisakeng, our executive producer, had a baby daughter 3 days ago. Welcome to life, Marang, and good luck to you. If she mothers you the way she mothers us, our child, you're in trouble. Till next week, have yourselves a wow week in spite of yourselves.